everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Matez, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Legs, how you doing today?
I'm great, man. Wild night in the league. I mean, almost too many games to watch. Unfortunately, I don't really necessarily like when we have that many games, Adam, because it's really hard when you have all these tips that are so close to each other, and you're just trying to figure out what's the one you want to focus on. But a very interesting night in the league for a lot of reasons, some involving basketball, some not so much.
Some players ejected in the first couple minutes that we're going to talk about. If that's, of course, Draymond Green. We're also going to get into asking which teams are poised to make a leap next year. Maybe didn't make it this year, but next year will make the leap. We're also going to ask who won the week. And we're going to start by talking about the hottest team in the NBA, the Houston Rockets, who got a win over the Thunder last night. But first, we are presented, as always, by DraftKings Sportsbook. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, Legs, let's start it off. The hottest team in the NBA picked up a road win in one of the toughest places to get a road win, Oklahoma City. They were on the second night of a back-to-back and without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but who cares about those details? The Rockets are streaking, and they put up 132 on the Thunder to make it 10 straight wins. What stood out to you about this game?
First thing that stood out is if you just watched overtime only, like those 5 minutes of basketball, that was about as entertaining as any full game I've watched all year. Overtime was amazing in this game with the shot making and even some of the plays down the stretch that led to overtime. Look, this is a great win. I don't care if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander played or not, man. Oklahoma City has enough of a core there to still be able to do it without him. And they're at home and they took the lead. And it looked like early in the fourth quarter, like they had this game under control. And it looked like with Golden State, you know, eventually winning that game, you know, this would have put them potentially two back if they drop it without the tiebreaker with the Warriors. It would put less significance on their game next Thursday if they're two back, right? So that's what you're looking at here. And they dug deep, man. They made the plays down the stretch. Dylan Brooks was incredible when he had to be offensively. Jalen Green, man, what a stretch he is on right now. And he was, again, sensational last night. I was impressed, man, with how bad they obviously wanted to win this game and how hard they dug in to make the plays that they needed to down the stretch. So give Houston all the credit.
There's nothing like a winning streak in sports, but there's like an energy and a belief a team gets, and it elevates their play. And you saw that last night. That was a Rockets team that's starting to believe in themselves. They have incredible energy. And after that game, some of the celebration that was coming from that team was one of, hey, we can see it. We can taste it. This is our moment. And what a big moment it would be for them. But the story for me, there's two stories. Number one, it's going to be Jalen Green. But to set the table for Jalen Green, the thing that stood out to me about this game, Chet Holmgren only plays 18 minutes and fouls out. He was already a thin big, but this game was so tiny. Most of the game was played without any bigs on the court. And when I say bigs, I don't just mean no centers. I'm talking Dylan Brooks at center. You know, you were playing two ways with tiny guys. So that's what stood out to me is Houston without Şengün is going really small, spreading teams out. And to a degree that every team plays small, this was some of the smallest basketball I've watched. And I think that's why it was such a high scoring game.
I agree with that. That's what it looked like at one point. It looked like, you know, you just had like 10 wings on the court. And that's how they decided matters. I want to focus on Jalen Green right now because I don't know to what extent maybe people now or nationally are starting to pay a little bit more attention to the Rockets and Jalen Green. You know, he's always going to have probably had his group of fans that loved him coming out or whatever. And it took some time. And I thought early in the year, you and I had a conversation about Jalen Green and we kind of were on the same page. Like, I didn't know if Jalen Green was just going to be another one of those guys that was like super athletic and blazing fast, but like never really played in a way that made you think that like he totally understood what he was trying to get done. He was never going to be efficient, you know, probably a 41% type shooter, like year after year, like right around 30 from the three, like that kind of player. Cause he's not really a point guard. He's not a point guard. He's an attacking lead guard. And guess what? There's a lot of those guys in the league and you can win with those guys. I mean, some teams, like that's their primary source of their offense. You can make plays for other people, but the main thing you're going to do is score, right? And just be that aggressive score. That's what he is. And if you're not doing that efficiently, Adam, it's kind of ugly to watch. It's not fun to watch a guy that plays that way that's not efficient, even if he gets to 20, 25. It's just like, okay, well, that was kind of ugly to watch. That wasn't really team basketball, whatever. when you look at what this guy is doing right now, he's electrifying. Adam, I'm watching him last night and I'm saying to myself, is there a guy in the league that's quicker to the rim from like when a ball screen set beyond the 3-point line and like the big jumps out and he turns the corner on that guy? I don't think there's anybody in the league that gets to the rim quicker from 28 feet to the rim. I thought Tyrese Maxey was like the quickest guy at that. De'Aaron Fox can be lightning quick at that. I don't know, man. I think Jalen Green might be the one. And when you watched him last night, I saw a combination of players, and people lose their minds when you do this because they think you're comparing them to these guys' careers. Yeah. I'm not doing that. You're telling me right now you don't see some Ja Morant in this guy?
Yeah.
You don't see some Russell Westbrook in this guy? Because yeah. I see both of those things. I even see a little bit of Iverson in this guy. In his
left-right quickness.
His fearlessness, too. Fearlessness to take hits. And that's kind of like Ja as well. And like the way that they jump and then figure it out in the air, that's kind of like Ja. And they end up shooting a reverse layup, and you can't even believe they got the ball to the other side of the rim, like where they jumped from, like stuff like that. That's what he reminded me of when I was watching him last night. And by the way, he's shooting 43% from the three in the month of March. He's shooting 50 from the field. So forget all that lack of efficiency talk. He's doing it, and he's doing it in big ways. During this 10-game winning streak, he has 8 games of 27 points or more. 8. Yeah. And he's clearly the driving force of their offense. He can do whatever he wants offensively. The ball is a magnet to get back to him when he gives it up because he's so impossible to keep really from being out of the lane. And then when he's making threes the way that he was last night and the way that he was during the stretch, you now have a guy that's really difficult to deal with. And you could see it last night. So I was super impressed with him last night, super impressed with him during the streak. And I think I'm changing my opinion ultimately about what his ceiling is going to be.
Wow. The guy, you mentioned a couple big names, and I definitely see it. This is all the same mold of skill. It's that first step is just so quick, long stride, super bouncy, and then fearless. Zach LaVine's another guy I would probably compare him to, in that Zach LaVine could just go 0 to 60 with one long stride and then bounce. And the bounce almost like he gets speed and then it propels him into these crazy acrobatic attacks at the rim. So that's the guy that I was kind of physically would comp him to. But he, over the streak, 30 points per game, 51, 46, 79 splits. That's phenomenal. That's superstar efficiency. I think there's two things working in their favor right now without Şengün. And this is the interesting question. Last year, under Coach Silas, Jalen Green, I thought, had more control of the offense, Şengün taking a little bit of a backseat. This year, Şengün's taking more control of the offense, and Jalen Green's having, you know, a down year relative to his previous years. Even Rockets fans, we talked earlier about, is he even part of the long-term plan? Well, Şengün goes down, and now he's back to having an open paint and attacking. So it's making me wonder, one, about the compatibility of those two players, but I'm going to phrase it a different way. Do you think the open paint is more to credit for Jalen Green's rise here over this last 10, 15 games? Or do you think it's more just the confidence you get from being able to not have to worry about where you fit in? Now I fit in where I want to fit in. I could take the shots. Which one do you think has been more impactful on this rise of his?
The latter thing that you said, there's no doubt he's feeling it now. And he feels like the game now is, can be instinctive to him and go bleep, be what I want to be and not overthink this. And I think that's when you add Şengün to the mix and a little bit slightly more crowded paint. Yeah, but I think if Jalen Green was operating at this level from a confidence standpoint, he'd still be able to do that with Şengün on the court because Şengün still spends a decent amount of time in the perimeter. There's going to be opportunities and angles for him to attack and get there. No, this is a guy that right now is every night he's kind of going out there and it feels like, you know, he's on some team that he played on when he was younger, where, like, you know, it was completely his team and he was the man. And that's, he's carrying himself like that now and he's delivering on it. So, yeah, man, for me, I'm telling you, like, I was with you, I think. And I think you're still, I can tell by what I said a second ago, your reaction, you're kind of still like that. Look, I'm not saying I'm ready to go ahead and let's add him into the mix of young superstars on the rise. I'm not there yet. What I'm saying, though, is he's changed my mind at least to reconsider what I thought ultimately this guy was going to be, because I was picturing a guy like his whole career being between 18 and 21 points, shooting 40% from the field, and maybe not on good teams. I don't know that I feel that way anymore. I feel like there's more there. So I'm going to certainly, he deserves, I think, to have that conversation revisited. When you go on a stretch like this and you're winning games, It's not like they're losing games. They're not 3-7 right. in 10 game stretch. They're winning every night. And by the way, the plays he's making, like at the end of this game, like some of the finishes he had, some of the threes that he made, they had to have those. And he delivered on it. So I'm, like I said, man, I'm revisiting, at least being open-minded about ultimately what this means for Jalen Green. And, you know, maybe look at, maybe it's this year, maybe it's not, because I don't know if they're going to catch Golden State. Last night was a great opportunity, and Steph Curry just did not let that happen by what he did late in that game with Orlando. You know, maybe it's not this year. Maybe they don't make the play-in. Maybe they make the play-in right. and lose the first game. I don't know. At some point, you see Jalen Green, you know, take that stage with another elite level guard in one of these matchups we're dying to see, and see how he carries himself in a best of seven series. That's down the road, man. That's coming. And I think that ultimately maybe will change a lot of people's minds if he can get there and certainly play anything like this.
Well, I don't like close the door on any players, especially young players. So Jalen Green, here's what I'll say. That mold of player, the scoring guard, especially one that relies on talent and skill, to me, that's the slowest developing player. I think it's so dangerous to draft a player like that, because often years one and two are rough. And if they hit, it's year three and four. And a team has to make such an investment before it starts to get there. You even think about Kobe Bryant's early career. His first couple of years turns out to be one of the greatest players ever, but it took several years coming in at 18 to be able to become, you know, a positive impact player. I think Jalen Green, if you're an optimist, you're looking at that and saying, we've always seen the talent there, the underlying talent, but can you put it together? Oftentimes it's year three or year four where that player puts it together. And that might be what we're seeing from him right now. So real quick, do you agree with that, that the toughest mold of player to develop, the longest runway, is either for point guards, like true traditional point guards, or for undersized scoring guards, meaning thin scoring guards?
No doubt. No question about it. And usually most of those guys, and by the way, he's listed at 6'4". Does he not look significantly bigger than that? Like,
he's so skinny.
And his arms are so long. Like there are times, like, if you didn't know what number he wore, there were times like, you're like, is that Jalen Green? Like, that he just looks like a small forward. Like, but yeah. They say 6'4", I'll go with it. 186 pounds. Like, that's what his page is listed at, man. Okay. Look, I'm not a bodybuilder, but you know, whatever. I got a little bit of mass on me. I was like 6'4", 210.
Yeah.
As a shooter in the league. Yeah. I was primarily a shooter. This dude's 6'4", 186. Like, you're right, rail thin. I'll say this, man. He is one of those guys, like it or not, that you got to watch right now, because he's exciting. And to your point, I agree with you. It is hard. And usually, Adam, those guys that are like the undersized scoring guard, which is really what you're talking about, what do those guys oftentimes become? You know what they become? They become Jordan Clarkson. They become Jamal Crawford. Like, they become, yep. right? That,
yep.
Bobby Jackson back in the day. They become that. Like, man, you know, they wanted to be like a point guard, but they like shooting too much, so we can't do that. So now you got to play a different style. But can you really carry a team playing that way? Probably not. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to bring you off the bench, limit your minutes, and then do what you want in those 25 minutes, though. Like, be you. But we can't have that for like 38, 40 minutes. And I don't know. Right now he is doing that in those 38, 40 minutes, and he's playing that way, and it's leading to wins. So let's just keep riding this, man, and keep watching this team and see where this goes. And still, man, got next Thursday circled. Houston, Golden State, like that, if this stays like this, better off actually if they're tied going into that game. Because if Houston is one back, even if they win next Thursday, Golden State's got the tiebreaker, right? So they still control it. So you really want to have drama, have those two teams be tied going into next Thursday night, which, you know, the way Houston's playing could happen.
What else? So outside of Jalen Green, who obviously has been fantastic, I think we gave him a lot of love here. Who else from Houston has stood out to you in this game?
Well, I thought, clearly last night, Dylan Brooks was, was sensational in this game with some of the plays he made. And look, I'm not necessarily the biggest Dylan Brooks fan, but you can't deny how well he played. And then Amen Thompson was incredible last night, he's exciting to me. He's exciting because he's longer and he likes to defend. And he's a guy that had his imprints all over that game last night. just look, man, they got a young team. Remember we did the debate a while back, Orlando's core, Houston's core, and we had a great debate about that, man. And when you watch a game like last night, you see the way some of these young guys played, you're like, wow, that's really, that's, you know, is it tilted more? And they didn't even have Şengün. Is it tilted more toward Houston? But Amen Thompson was great too.
I love Amen Thompson. 15 rebounds, by the way, and he does it a lot. He's a rebounder. He's an incredible rebounder as a wing. And then, so I love his game. And then, by the way, you didn't even mention Tari Eason, who's another guy I really love, who's not, you know, obviously playing right now. So they have two guys that you add to this mix if you can. Jabari Smith, I thought, would be a guy maybe you brought up here. Didn't, I mean, 4 of 10, 2 of 5 from 3, but he hit a big one late in the game. And he's another guy that I just see, I would not be surprised if his curve is steep. Because I love, one, the size and the shot. Those things alone are going to make you an incredibly valuable player. But I just like his feel for the game, his sense of the game.
I do too. And he is a guy that's going to get probably overshadowed here as this core grows together because of the electrifying nature with which Jalen Green plays. Like, your just eyes are drawn more to him. And Jabari is more like, he's going to do things a little bit more fundamentally sound, but a very, very good player. Yeah. And I think helps complement those guys tremendously because he's got a great IQ and a great feel for the game. And you need some of that, you know, to balance out just this raw energy.
Yeah. It's almost like you have Jabari Smith, Amen Thompson. I know Amen Thompson a little raw with his shot and different skills, but fun guys that I think see the game and play fundamentally, Şengün there. And then you got guys like Tari Eason and Jalen Green who just like overwhelm you. So they have a little bit of both molds of players. And I just like their young core. If we go to the other side, Oklahoma City in this one, I have to make this note. Another game from Josh Giddey where I just thought he was an impactful offensive player. I keep talking about how nervous I am about him, but he keeps performing really well. So even in a loss, I thought Giddey was really good.
Giddey was great. And I'm blown away by the fact that this morning and all the TV, I was on TV a lot this morning, and primarily 95%, maybe more, of the conversation was about Draymond Green, which we're going to get into here shortly. Okay. That was obviously a major talking point this morning. And somehow, maybe because of that, I don't know, maybe because there were so many games last night, why are we not making a bigger deal out about Josh Giddey making a shot from sitting in the middle of the lane with four guys around?
That was a hilarious
play. If you didn't see it, please go watch the highlight. Josh Giddey was driving to the basket last night, going left, fell to the ground, was losing the ball. I think it was Jalen Green actually diving for the ball. Giddey kind of recovers the loose ball, like laying on his side, spins out of that to a seated position. His rear end is on the floor in the lane at about 10 to 12 feet with traffic all in the lane, and he just shot the ball from a seated position, and he made the shot. And we're just not going to talk more about that? Is that not the shot of the year? Are you kidding me with that, what he did? I know how many players, and I've seen it, how many players have recovered loose balls, and it's like maybe late in the clock, and they look up, and they're sitting down, and they're thinking about it, but they don't even do it. They'll take the shot clock violation rather than do something that ridiculous. But Josh Giddey actually did it in the moment, and he made it. And his reaction was no big deal. He gave somebody like sort of like a wink and a sly eye on the next time out. Like, he was looking at somebody. The camera caught him. He was kind of laughing to himself. And there were some great reactions from guys on the bench. But I don't know. I felt like we should have made a bigger deal about it. But to your bigger point about him, you're 100% right. He was great, man. He had floaters. He had pull-ups. He had a seated down jump shot. He had all of it, man. Giddey played great. You know, he still can't make a three. He was 0 for 3 from the three, but he did everything else well.
Yeah. And by the way, the shot he took from seated shot, you said most guys won't even take it. I didn't even know if he needed to take it. I thought he had somebody he could have flipped the ball to. That's what was so funny about it. He's like, nah, I'll take this one. Drained it. And then just, again, the smallness of this game is another thing that stood out. And Muscala plays 4 minutes only. Chet Holmgren, 18 minutes. The rest of the time, you're just going so small. And it worked out in this game because this was a small ball one. But it continues to be one of those things about the Thunder is, what are their options behind a Jalen Williams, behind a Chet Holmgren? I'm not so sure. Isaiah Joe, though, you want to talk about big-time shots. Isaiah Joe had a poster. That the seated jump shot might have been nice, but the Isaiah Joe poster dunk, that might have been the play of the game.
I think that might have been the most shocking thing that a player did in regards to what his teammates expected his ceiling was. like there's, you could just tell by their reaction. Look, Isaiah Joe is a guy that's making his living shooting threes, right? You don't expect that out of a guy now that has accepted this new role. And actually it was funny because I got some friends that love the Sixers and, you know, he was there for a while and never did had that moment. And some of those guys loved Isaiah Joe. Like they were so upset. Yeah. Isaiah Joe left Philadelphia. So that was like just a nail in their coffin last night, watching Isaiah Joe do that on a dunk, you know, with his left hand with a guy back. His teammates' reaction was priceless because they're like, whoa, it's almost like they'd never seen Isaiah Joe dunk with anything like that type of authority, even in practice, the way that they reacted.
It's true, though. I mean, I did not know he – when I saw the highlight come through, like, because before I was watching the game, I saw the highlight come through, and I'm thinking, who was it that did that? Who was it? I would not have guessed Isaiah Joe. He's also 4-6 from the three-point line, 6 assists. He impressed me in this one. The Thunder actually impressed me, being down their star player on the second night of a back-to-back and making it as close as they did. So they've been winning a lot of these really close games and just surprising me, but this was when they dropped. And could have been costly, but the Nuggets dropped one as well. Any final thoughts?
By the way, real quick, this is two out of the last three games, man, that Chet has really struggled. And we've been raving about Chet Holmgren all year long. So let's see now. Let's just watch Chet here and have a bounce back, because that's two out of three. He had a 1-for-10 game last night, 18 minutes, fouls out of the game with 5 turnovers. Right. He had 5 turnovers and 6 fouls in 18 minutes, man. That's really difficult to pull off. Like 11 things that aren't good in 18 minutes. So let's see how Chet bounces back, because he's been a non-factor in two of their last three games.
Over this 10-game win streak, the Rockets have the number one fast break points per game. They're number 2 in offense, number 7 in defense. They're a good story. And now here they are, just a game behind Golden State. Congratulations. You have a 10-game win streak. You're going to need to win like 8 of your last 10 now. You're going to have to keep the streak going probably just to get in, but we'll see if they're up for it. All right, let's take a break. On the other side, we're going to get to the ejection that Legs has been talking about all morning. Draymond Green in a must-win game. 2 minutes. 2 minutes before he gets tossed out of there, but Steph Curry carries him. Also, Suns Nuggets. Suns surprise the Nuggets. Clippers get a controversial win perhaps at the buzzer. We'll break down that and more on the other side. First, we're almost at the weekend. It's our final show of the week. It's time to open up the Game Time app and check out what's going on in your neck of the woods. You wanting to go to a concert or an event, a festival, or, of course, a sporting event, an NBA game, we'll open up the Game Time app, check out what's going on in your area, and see if there are any last-minute deals, flash deals, zone deals, last-minute ticket drops. You can find all of that and more on the Game Time app. You can also view from what your seat looks like, any seat in the house. You can go and do that little preview, and it'll show you what it looks like from that spot, and they have the all-in ticket pricing. So you just click that button at the very top, and you're not surprised with the fees and everything else at the end. You'll know exactly what you're paying when you get to check out. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use our promo code ALLNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code by using the code ALLNBA for $20 off. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. Also want to tell you about DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, March Mania is here. DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college bet. So you might as well do that tonight. Tonight and tomorrow, the round of 16 in NCAA, some really good games lined up. You want to throw down a bet on them? Win or lose, you're going to get $150 instantly in bonus bets whenever you make a bet of just $5. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use code ALLNBA. New customers bet $5, get $150 instantly in bonus bets with code ALLNBA. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, back here, segment 2 of the All-NBA show. We're doing this 4 times a week, usually Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. We changed things up this week because of March Madness, but we'll be back to our regular scheduled programming next week. If you're watching live, don't forget to hit that like button and do us a favor, subscribe on your podcast app to help us boost those numbers as well. We hope you're enjoying the show. We're moving on now. We're going to Orlando, where the Golden State Warriors were on the second night of a back-to-back. They played Miami last night and got the win. Now they're in Orlando, and it's a big game, Legs. It's a big moment in the season. You got Houston hot on your tail. You're in the 10 seed. You got to focus and get your team going. So as a leader of the team, how do you approach that game if you're a Draymond Green, Legs?
Well, clearly you approach that game like you're expecting to leave it in about 4 minutes and let your guys out there by themselves flapping in the wind, right? That's what you're going to do if you're Draymond in that situation. Adam, I don't even know where to begin with this. Very rarely have I watched a game and seen a player do something that hurts their own team, and like I get upset about it because I'm not losing sleep over the Warriors or Magic winning or losing this games. I just come on and give my honest analysis every day. I don't have like a dog in this fight at all. And I was so angered by this because it was so unnecessary and over the top on Draymond's part. Okay, the foul, the initial foul call was like, I think it was Bankero, like tripped. It wasn't a foul. I agree with Draymond. I thought it was a bad call. All right, it happens all the time. Bad call. You give your 2 cents, man. You had a lot to say to the official. You put your arm on an official for a second. Fast forward 30 seconds later, there's another call he's not even involved in. It's on the opposite side of the lane. There's a foul called on somebody else. He just happens to be, you know, near the play. And now he proceeds to take that time. By the way, from the first tech until the time of his ejection, I don't know how many minutes in real time, but it's a couple at least. And he has all that time to understand the ramifications if he keeps going, because you're going to put a person with authority and power, which is an official, into a place where they're going to do something that they really don't want to do, which is eject you. You're going to give them no choice if you keep this up. And he just wouldn't stop. And you could see everybody kind of around him, like walking on eggshells, like nobody went and grabbed him or anything, because they've probably been down this road 1,000 times. He's not going to listen to me. Like if Steph Curry put his arms around him, he's probably going to throw Steph Curry off of him. And then it's just even a worse, you know, it's a worse visual. And Steph Curry's probably seen it. They've all seen it. So they just let it play out. How far is it going to go? They're so used to seeing Draymond get away with more after his first tech than any player in NBA history. And they've seen it night after night. He gets away with it all the time because nobody's got the nerve to toss him. And so that's what they're probably praying, but it got too far. It's too much. And eventually the official has no choice. You're gone. So here you are, 4 minutes into a game you have to have. And by the way, Kuminga's not playing. So why is that important? Because you and Kuminga are the two players primarily responsible for guarding their best player. That's a big deal. And now you're going to leave other guys to do that. That's your primary source of production in this game, is to slow down or limit Pablo Banchero's efficiency. That's what you're out there to do. And now you're gone. And then he just walks to the locker room. And I mean, I thought the more telling than anything I could say about how selfish that is to not rein in your emotions in that situation, because there's no other word for it. That's putting you and the bubble world you're living in about venting and how important that is to you above everything. Your teammates, the organization, your own family, everything. There's nothing more important to me right now than getting this off my chest. I don't care what it costs my team. That's selfish. I'm sorry. It's a team sport. But I think, Adam, even more than anything I could say to sum up what this felt like to them, look at Steph Curry. And the one that they keep showing is when he put his jersey over his head right after it happened, and he didn't be shaking his head a little bit. No, they don't. You're not seeing the clip that I saw watching the game, which is the look that he had where he was standing and staring off into space right after they threw him out of the game. He just stood there staring, like up into the crowd, for 30 seconds because he couldn't even believe that we're about to deal with this right now. Because that's one of the most competitive dudes in the league. He wants to play meaningful basketball games, whether it's play-in or beyond. He wants that to happen. And Draymond Green, you owe it to number 30. You owe Curry more than anybody else. You owe it to Steph Curry. That dude has put rings on fingers and money in banks, bank accounts. You owe it to him to make sure that that does not happen, particularly after what happened earlier this season with the suspension with Nurkic and Rudy Gobert and all that stuff. Like, you owe it to him, to your teammates. And it just, none of that in the moment is he able to process, because he puts himself first in those situations. And it cost his team, and fortunately didn't cost him a game because of Curry's late game heroics, really. On a night he didn't play great, he was great late when he needed to be.
That's why this story is really kind of bittersweet, because on the one hand, you have a story of Steph Curry in that moment. And look, everybody saw it. It did feel like betrayal, I imagine. It did feel just like, what am I doing? We got 9 games left. I'm locked in. I'm giving my all to this, and the guy can't control himself. So you have him overcoming that, but you also have the other part of it, which is it's hard to watch that moment, the interactions you're talking about, and not feel like we're past the line. You know, we've talked a lot about, is this the last run? Is this the last, you know, are they going to break it up? Is Curry going to have to make a decision? Is the Warriors going to have to make a decision? After last night, I think I can go ahead and say, this is it. This is the run. Maybe they make a Cinderella run. Maybe they actually do something. But it just feels to me like this is at some point, a guy is who he's always going to be. And Steph almost looked like that was an acceptance of, all right, there is no second act here. This is it.
I finally agree with you. And think about what we're saying. Think about some of the things we're talking about that have happened. He got suspended during the finals with a 3-1 lead.
Insane. What are we even doing?
It turned the series around. He got suspended, or I don't even know. He got suspended. He punched a teammate at practice.
Yeah.
He, you know, turned around and basically cold cocked Yusuf Nurkic and tried to act like he was trying to get a guy off of him in the post.
But he went to therapy after that one.
He put Rudy Gobert in a chokehold because he put his hands on Klay Thompson and then dragged him basically 40 feet across the court. Okay, so despite all of that, I agree with you. I think last night was the tipping point. And you know why? And by the way, I'm gonna stay on this subject for a minute because this got me heated up. When he came back from the suspension, and I remember I was on the air that day, and the question thrown to me was, what do you expect to see out of Draymond tonight? And here's what I said. Well, I know what I better not see. I better not see an overreaction emotionally immediately to the first whistle that doesn't go his way. Because I got news for you. And I understand that's not the same as punching a player. That's not the same as putting a guy in a chokehold or punching a teammate. I get it. But guess what? Those things are connected. They are connected because it all gets back to the same thing. And it's called self-control. It's called restraint. And it's called, by the way, if you genuinely took that time to work on yourself, you go into a room. I don't even know if he got therapy or not. Let's say he did. He went to see a therapist. I got news for you, man. You know when you're really ready to get help from a therapist? I can tell you that. I've been to therapy, man. I've had some things go sideways in my life personally. I've seen a therapist. I'm not ashamed to admit it. And you know when you're ready to accept what they're about to tell you? When you've looked into the eyes of somebody you love and you know that you've hurt them maybe. And is that not the case with his team? So for me, I said that night, yeah, you submit during that suspension, man. I submit, dude. This is embarrassing. And I've hurt my team. I've got to stop. And so that means also not overreacting 5 minutes into a game about an inadvertent whistle, man, that didn't go your way. Big deal. The problem is he's so used to crossing that line with officials with no repercussions. He just thinks it's how it's always going to go. And yeah. Last night, that poor ref, he didn't want to do that. He walked away from him, man. He didn't want to do that. You keep coming at somebody. If you can read Draymond's lips at the end of that, go ahead, read his lips and tell me that didn't deserve it. And to Steve Kerr's credit, he said he deserved it. They usually don't say that. I'm glad Steve Kerr said that because he did deserve it. But at the same time, he'll bounce back. He'll be good. Steph Curry, you know, he knows he can't do that. He means too much to us. And, you know, and then Draymond's tweet, let's bounce back. Let's get him. Thanks, dogs, for having my back. And then boom, we're on to the next game. Now, right now, they don't have a choice, Adam, because of what they're in. They have to win every night. There's only a handful of games left. Like, they don't have a choice. They've got to move on to the next game and just think about that. But I finally agree with you. Last night, I believe, was the tipping point for Draymond Green. Now, listen, it's not easy. They owe him a lot of money. Right. He carries all of this with him. There's only going to be a couple of teams in the market for that. Can you make that happen if you're the Warriors over the summer? I don't know, but I think it's the first time they're genuinely going to visit that situation where Draymond Green is no longer a part of this team.
I see a comment here in the chat from JE that says that mindset got him in the league and now he's done. He had a good run. I always hate this one because Draymond uses this one as well. He'll always say, I've been like this my whole life and it's what got me here. And that might be true. That fire and intensity might be what got him here. But here's why I hate it. People have to evolve. People have to grow. This idea of like my flaws, I've gotten here with my flaws, therefore they can maintain and be what they are. No, you have to evolve as a person and as a player. And that intensity might have got you there, but the control of that intensity can take you even higher or sustain that level. And he seems to have no interest in that. And last night, what you're talking about here is if Draymond's going to do that in that moment, when the game was so important and you're at the very beginning, if he's going to do it at that moment, there's no moment he won't do it. And I think that was what Steph is probably looking at is I've got this guy, can't control it.
Well said. And you're right. And here's the other thing. It's a second night of a back-to-back, man. And you're shorthanded. Everybody's tired. Yeah. They need you. And here's the thing. By the way, I'm not doing this anymore. What I've always done with this situation, when these crop up, and it's been going on now for 12 years, every time this comes up, you know what people do? They preface it with all the things he's done to help the Warriors.
Right.
They always do it. Well, listen, this guy, we wouldn't have four rings without him, and he's a Hall of Famer, and he's all defensive player of the year. And stop. I'm not doing it anymore. I won't do that anymore. I'm not doing it because guess what? I got news for you, man. Those things are not mutually exclusive of each other. It's not like, well, gosh, if he wasn't like that, they wouldn't have won. No, there's plenty of dudes that have won rings that didn't carry themselves like that, that have control of their emotions. There's a lot of ultra-competitive alphas that have won rings as role players even that don't act like that. So you don't have to tell me that you can't have both because you can. And by the way, if you just couldn't control yourself at some point in your career, Adam, don't you think by now, this year, with what happened earlier in the season, if you can't do it now, after all, and by the way, this wasn't a dude on the other team in your face starting a fight. This was a simple tripping foul that maybe you didn't touch the guy and they got you for a whistle and it led to you being ejected from the game. Are you kidding me? You're kidding me. So that's what I'm saying. Like it's at the point finally. And I've said forever, I think the best reality show you could ever create would be to put a bug in Steph Curry's car. And in Steve Kerr's car so that you could hear what they really think on the way home from the game. That's what I want to know, man. Like, because there's no way that those guys aren't unleashing to their significant others, to their wives, like to whoever, right? There's just no way. Like, are you kidding me right now? That just happened. And that's exactly what Steph let everybody see last night. And he wasn't even attending it. That was nothing about that was orchestrated. Steph Curry was spent from this and absolutely blown away that they were about to go play 44 minutes of a game without him that they absolutely have to have, man. They're hanging by a rope off a cliff and he let go, man. He let go on them last night. You know, it's the military analogy, like getting out of the foxhole running, man. That's what he did. He left them out there by themselves. And that's very difficult over a period of time, Adam, to keep accepting apologies and remorse. Because you know when remorse really impacts someone that's been hurt? It really impacts them when there's change behind it. Right? The apology's great, and it's important at times to heal. And maybe even multiple times the same thing. But at some point, you really appreciate it as the person that's sort of been victimized, which are his teammates. If there's change behind it, now you really think there's genuine remorse there. And that, to this point, what he did last night, I think it goes to show you it has never reached his core to make it think it's more important than him to do that for his teammates. And that's the part that I have a hard time relating to, because the only thing I ever cared about when I played was making sure I didn't let down the guys on my team. That's the number one thing, even more than my coaches, the fans, my family. It was the guys I was playing with. They were counting on me to be a certain way, to work hard, to be there for them on the court. They could trust me to be there when I had to make a play. That I didn't want to let them down. I felt terrible about myself. And he just doesn't seem to have that. Like it at the end of the day, in these moments, he can't find that. It's about him. I have to do this. This is what I need to do. Hell with everybody else. You guys deal with the repercussions.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
One other game we got to get to real quickly. Phoenix Suns beat the Denver Nuggets in Denver. So Denver now, coming out of the break, has been the hottest team in the NBA, but they have a loss to the Mavs and two home losses to the Suns. Now, this one was a weird one. No Jamal Murray, no Yusuf Nurkic. The story for me was that the Phoenix Suns went to Thad Young for 18 minutes at center last night. Much of that matched up against Nikola Jokic, and it really helped them. Not only defensively were they able, and I don't know if Jokic was just being passive last night or what. I thought Denver played a very lackadaisical game, surprisingly disinterested in this one, got beat on the offensive boards. But if we just try to break down, and Denver even experimented with some lineups. They played Peyton Watson at center for a while. They did some weird stuff in this game. But Thad Young hasn't been playing a whole lot. And last night, when you talk about if you're going to try to play a five-out system, if you're going to go small, you want your small ball five to be able to play make. And he did a great job of that. Phoenix plays where they get trapped a lot and they have to swing the ball and find the open guy. Thad Young was a great connector last night, and I just filed that away as, that's something I haven't seen from them a lot, and it might be an option for them.
I completely agree. He had an impact, and it was an interesting lineup to go to. I want to get back to something you said, though, first. Why do you think that is? Because I agree with you. I watched the game, and I'm like, why does Denver not look like this is like, you know, an important game or big game today? Because I agree. That's what I got out of it. And look, I've been killing the Suns, as everybody knows, and I didn't expect they were going to win this game. I didn't think they had any shot to win this game. I should know better, I guess, because this league is so unpredictable and Jamal Murray's not playing. I get it. So it's possible. But the way Phoenix was playing, and talk about disinterested as they had looked recently, and the fact that you couldn't beat a Spurs team without Wembanyama, like all that stuff added all up. And I'm going, how are they going to go into Denver right now, who's trying to hold on to the number one seed and beat them? That's not going to happen. And yet they get it done. And I didn't think Phoenix was exceptional. I thought that they did have better flow to their offense because it wasn't quick isolations. It was more get into the paint, draw, kick, and then maybe even make an extra pass out of that. Like, their looks were better, like, particularly after they penetrated. So there was a higher IQ to the game for them. It's not like they played out of their minds. Durant was very, very good. Nobody else was great, and yet they win the game. Do you think it's because, you know, I don't know, Denver didn't hit him with an early punch? Like, if you hit Phoenix with you're up 10 in the first quarter, that might be a 25-point game. But Phoenix kind of set the tone early that they were going to be in this game and they're here. And I just thought Denver didn't have it last night. And I was wondering if you could give me any explanation for that.
I can't. The Nuggets have, 17, 18 games since the All-Star break. And they've been good in most of them. Last night was just a rare letdown game. And you look at it, again, I don't want to take anything away from the Suns. They played great. They shot great. But Denver scoring 97 points against a front court that features Thad Young, Drew Eubanks. That's not – the Suns winning with defense last night was not on my bingo card, and that's what happened. So Jokic sometimes seems to play the passive game, and he was doing that last night, and for whatever reason, they just never found a rhythm.
Can I say something?
I don't make too much of it, though, to be honest.
One last thing about this from Denver's perspective, and Hugh and I were talking before the show. I find it interesting that I don't think there's any coach that's more overtly angry with his team than Mike Malone. And yet, you know, this is the team that won a championship and maybe going to win another one. And I love it. I personally love it because I played – that was like the style of coaching when I played. And you could get on guys and you could get on your team without sensitivities kicking in and worrying about a guy leaving in free agency because you yelled at him one day. Like, you know, now it's like, it seems like it's completely player empowerment. Coaches rarely show that side of themselves. I feel like Mike Malone does it like most nights. At some point, he's going to get really ticked off. And I think it's great, man. I do. And I think it works for them and it works for that personality type on that team.
Yeah. All right, let's move on now because I want to ask you a question. This year, if we look at the teams that made the leap, And I'm not talking about they added somebody in free agency and made a leap. I just mean teams whose young cores elevated. You have to look at the Magic, who were a 13 seed last year. They're 4-5, you know, in that 4-5 race right now. The Pacers were an 11 seed last year. The Thunder were a 9 seed. The Wolves were an 8 seed. Those four teams, largely because of the growth of their own internal development, made giant leaps this year. Is there anybody else that you think, before we move on, is there anybody this year that you feel made a leap? And do you agree that all four of those teams just kind of made the leap?
No, I think those would be the four. I will say this. I think personally for me, from a perception standpoint, I think the Knicks did too. I think the Knicks took a leap forward this year. And look, they've been banged up to fully, I think, capitalize on it, maybe this year at all, particularly with the uncertainty of Randall. I do think that the perception of the Knicks as a viable, like, legitimate, like, threat, a presence in the Eastern Conference is more solidified this year than it's been in a long time. So I will put them in that category as well. But, you know, I think you hit on it. Those are the four teams that you're looking at for sure.
The addition of OG Anunoby, that's an acquisition, so it's a little bit different to me, although they were playing well before that. But to me, the difference
– I hear
adding,
you.
Adding OG to the mix to me is just a little bit different.
Yeah, this is more like in-house. This was already in-house, and it just got better, yeah.
And it just got better. It made the leap. So if we look next year, here are some of the teams that I think could make the leap, although I'm not sure if any of them are going to be it. The Houston Rockets, and maybe this end-of-year run is going to propel them. It might also disguise how big of a leap it is, because now the win-loss record might not reflect it, but 10-game win streak at the end of the year. The Rockets, the Hornets, the Pelicans, and the Spurs. You could throw the Grizzlies in there, but I think the Grizzlies are a little bit artificially deflated this year with the injuries and suspensions and different things. But those four teams, to me, the Spurs, Pelicans, Hornets, Rockets, are the candidates. Do any of those teams make the leap just from internal development?
Did you include the Rockets, or did you say Hornets too?
Rockets, Hornets, Pelicans, Spurs.
I would go of that. Listen, the Spurs are the obvious first answer, just because who knows what the leap Victor Wembanyama is going to take, like, in a year, right? So they would certainly put them, because they're not going to allow them to go through another year where I did, because it felt like to me a lot of this year was not any concern whatsoever for winning games. And I think that's going to change next year. Just, you know, so, and I think Wembanyama's growth. So put them first. I think another team could be Charlotte. Like, I look at them and cause I think LaMelo Ball, man, is like, I think he's a really, really special talent. And he also is a guy that does elicit you to play a little bit harder, because he'll reward you with his passing. He played 22 games, you know, 22 games, man. He's going to play a quarter of the season. So I would look at them. And also, I think Brandon Miller is a guy that could be like take a huge step forward next year. He already has this year from beginning of the season to like now. Imagine now add another offseason, getting stronger, adding to his game, coming into next year, playing with hopefully like a point guard that stays out there the whole time. I think that Brandon Miller could be taking that leap forward as well, to where now Charlotte could be a team to make significant growth. And what they win this year. So right now Charlotte is at, you know, 18 wins. They have 10 games left. You know, maybe they win 20 games this year. Yeah, I could see Charlotte possibly being a team that gets into that play-in type range, you know, next year, where now you're talking about them all the way throughout the season in a positive way.
The Pelicans I added on here, and I'm sure Pelican fans are, what are you talking about? We're already a good team. They are, but the Pelicans are better than their record. Like, the Pelicans, to me, are a team that is right on the cusp of being the way we think about the Thunder. They just haven't been able to put it together for a full season, and I'll just keep doing this every year, I'm sure. Just keep – the way people keep believing in the Clippers, I'm going to keep believing that the Pelicans are so close to putting it together and being a top 2-3 contending team, where at their best they look like that right now, but they haven't done it consistently. My internet's a little tough today, so we're going to head on to our final segment of every week, which is, of course, Who Won the Week, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Who won the week? Legs, I'm going to give you the 4-0 teams. The 4-0, there's just one. The Lakers were 4-0 this week. The 3-0 teams are the Hawks, the Rockets, the Wolves, and the Knicks. And then the Mavs are 2-0. They only played two games in the last 6 days, a little bit of an anomaly. So the nominees for Who Won the Week, Jalen Green. Won it last week. Maybe we jumped the gun, because this week's even better. 35 points per game, 53-53-92 splits, and had his second 40-point game of the season earlier this week. Anthony Davis had 31-19 averages on a 4-0 week for the Lakers. He had four stocks as well, and he even got that win without LeBron, which was very impressive against Milwaukee. The Rockets, who are on a 10-game win streak, went 3-0, got the win at Oklahoma City. And then Kevin Durant, whose shooting splits are absolutely ridiculous, 28 points per game on 68-67-80 shooting over three games. So those are your nominees, Legs. Who are you going with?
Well, listen, I gave love to Jalen Green last week, which will cover him and the Rockets. So I'm kind of taking them out of the conversation right now. As hard as I was on the Suns, I'm not going in with anybody from Phoenix right now. So I have a tendency to lean more toward the player in these situations, but I'm going to go ahead and say the Lakers rather than Anthony Davis. And the reason is because, you know, this was a team week. You had multiple guys have big step up moments. Hachimura gives them a huge game against Memphis when AD's sitting after playing 52 minutes. No question, AD was the story in Milwaukee game, along with Austin Reeves, stepped up in a big way. D'Angelo Russell was great last night. It wasn't just Anthony Davis. As great as he was in the Milwaukee game, and you can't overstate that, this was to me more about the collective and continuing to win games, getting it across your roster, and continuing to stir the pot about whether the Lakers are a team that can somehow escape, you know, or get out of the play-in and then be a real threat to anybody in the West as long as they keep winning games. I don't care if it's Memphis or who it is. If you're winning games right now, you're going to continue to have that conversation going on because the Lakers have looked pretty good at times throughout this stretch, and they're getting it from a lot of different places.
Just like you, Legs. Big Market Legler, always giving shine to the Lakers, man. I can't.
Here we go. You do realize, like, after, you know, coming off of all the hours I spent on ESPN this morning, which, by the way, we didn't talk any Lakers.
What?
That's the one blessing for Draymond Green. Draymond Green basically ripped up the rundown, which was going to be about the Lakers. I guarantee you that. We were going to spend a lot of time on Lakers, and it didn't happen because we got to talk about Draymond. So you're right.
Thank you,
this
Draymond.
This is me pandering to the larger market. I hear you.
There you go. We did have one super chat. You can cue that outro music as we get to it here. Psycho Blue SFXE says, B-Ball Chitula is looking forward to Tim Legler's ongoing descent into madness as he continues watching the Suns be offensive team in all the wrong ways. I don't even know what this means. I think he's trying to trash talk you since the Suns won, but I don't know.
I'm not sure if he is or not. I don't know. I can't tell. That's a passive aggressive way to come at me, man. I'm not sure what you're trying to indicate there. But look, I got news for you, brother. One game does not erase it. You want to convince me? Keep it going for the next 10. I want to see. Yeah.
And maybe they will. You know what? We'll see what happens. That does it for us this week. A little bit of a 3-day weekend for us. But we enjoyed all of the shows this week. We thought we had some really, really good ones. If you haven't checked those out, go back and check them out on the YouTube page. Hit the like button for us. And don't forget, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you download podcasts. Download, rate, review. It helps us grow the show. Thanks, everybody. Have yourself a great weekend.
Y'all silly like the mayor.